We're going to talk about the symbology of the zodiac again. One person suggested it was a good idea, and another one said, we've had that, I remember. We're going to do it from a slightly different angle, because the more angles we approach a truth from, the more rich we see the symbology is. If we put a circle to represent the universe, or any encapsulated area of energy, then we're talking about a human being, or an atom, or an electron, or a solar system, or the whole universe considered as a totality of forces. And when I put a figure inside here, the figure must be remembered to represent something within the universe, the macrocosm, and within a human being, a microcosm, and within a bacterium, a virus. But how small you may go, matter how large, the symbols we use will apply to all these different systems. I'm going to start with the air triad, for the reason that the air triad is concerned with intellectual activity, and intellectual activity is concerned with formulating whatever else there may be in the universe, insofar as it is subject to intellectual analysis. So if I start at the base of this circle here, I'll put the sign of Libra here, and this signifies the basic requirements for an intellectual structure. It signifies perception. Now, perception is piraception. That is a rational cut out of ultimate holistic reality. When you perceive, you cut something rationally out of a holistic continuum of sentient power. So we have to say we begin with percepts, and by percepts we mean whatever we rationally cut out. It is not yet a percept until you rationally cut it out of the infinite continuum. If you hadn't got any percepts to begin with, you would be in the state prior to creation, prior to formulation, prior to verbalization. Now, the ultimate state of the sentient power field, considered independently of its formal content, is inexpressible. The only way we can express anything is, first of all, by finding some terms which shall signify the formal content of a situation. It is form, that is that which can be circumscribed, that the intellectual triad is concerned with. Remember, form means FRPR, pi ratio, circumscription, and without this circumscription there is no form. So when we put this circle down here, it means that we are considering what can be subsumed underneath the concept of form. To circumscribe is to draw a line round something and tie the two ends of it together. Suppose we say the ends are tied together there. If this were a piece of string and we undid the knot here and pulled it out straight, it would no longer circumscribe anything, and therefore it would not be representative of an intellectually formidable content. We'll start again at the beginning. In order to discuss, which means strike two together, like heads, Eric and David, in order to dis, that is two, cuss, that means strike, we must first circumscribe at least two areas. So we let the circle represent a binding cord or a rotating force. If we make forces rotate, we can use these rotating forces as circumscribed zones for experiment. To discuss is to strike two together. And it's most important. If you do not adequately define clearly, then you cannot discuss clearly. So that for every definition we make, we must have a circumscribing line, actually in intellectual discourse, a circumscribing line serially presented of words. And these words are necessarily tautological. They define themselves in a circle, and what is contained within this circle is the defined subject matter. So here we are with the circumscribed zone for consideration. And we are thinking, let us consider the implications of the use of the intellect. The intellect is based on formal percepts. The percept is what can rationally be cut out of an infinite continuum. So that as soon as we have a word which has any significance whatever, we are immediately within the realm of the determinable, the finite, and a contradiction of the infinite source of that finite. Before I draw on the paper, we have paper. Remember our illustration, we extend the paper in all directions to represent a plane through the infinite. Before we make any marks on this paper, we have nothing to talk about. The paper is a limiting concept of a plane upon which we can make marks to serve as a basis for intellectual consideration of a problem. Therefore, when we draw a circle and say, let us consider certain forces within this circle, we are opposing this finite circle to an infinity of other possible circles and to an infinity of space beyond all circles. So there's immediate opposition within the intellect, because in the act of creating a circumscribed zone, it necessarily limits itself to a formal consideration which for it is only the formal aspect of ultimate reality. And ultimate reality includes the infinite continuum of sentient power and all its modalities, out of which are selected those things that can be signified by words or drawn form symbols based on this primary effect, circumscription. What we cannot draw a line round, we cannot be clear about. We'll see when we come to examine the water triad, symbolizing the psychological aspect of the feeling life, non-formulated and experienced as a pleasure-pain flux. That in the feeling life, we must categorically exclude formulation as such. And therefore, the moment we discuss the feeling life, we will start to become unclear. But that does not mean that what we're talking about is rubbish. It simply means it is not subject to intellectual verbal formulation. We start with the intellectual triad because we are talking. If I started with the feeling triad, I wouldn't talk. I would first drift about without edges, which would make it very difficult to find out who was giving the talk. I would divest myself of my physical form, leave my trousers and jacket on the, what do they call these things down here? Platform. The platform on which I'm standing, I would leave it and reduce myself to humidity. And I would blow about, saying nothing, and just feeling what you were all feeling, that is to say, where has he gone? But I would not have a verbal formula for it. I would just feel totally lost. And I would be feeling it. I would not be not feeling it. I would be feeling it. And by lost, I would mean edgeless, uncircumscribed. A very important fact when we come to examine certain psychological aspects of the feeling life. Percepts are rational cuts out of infinite, total, sentient power. Sentient power is all that is, and rational cuts out of it are percepts. Now, you cannot rationally cut out of the infinite without purposing. The mere fact that it is a rational cut means that it is related. And if it is related to something, it is necessarily purposive. So in the Pirasept, we have a word, remember we take vowels out to analyze words. We could equally well say a Pursept, and say a purpose. A purpose is something that is positive, pose, pose, put, in order to fulfill a pur. Now you know that a pur is a poop equals push plus a differentiating tendency in the primary energy doing the push. Purpose is pur pose equals a fire put in order to realize some aim. Pirasept is a pur pose cut out of its infinite sentient power environment. So that every time you look or listen or smell or taste or touch and take out of ultimate infinite reality some element in order to fulfill some purpose, consciously or unconsciously defined, then you have done an act called perceptual. A perceptual act is an act in which your energy cuts out of infinite reality that which appears to you to offer a possibility of fulfilling some purpose. So in Libra we have the balance of all possible percepts, an equilibrated, formulated field. And that field is said to be under the dominion of Venus. Venus, as you all know, is a goddess of love, and this means that there is an inclination in every percept to find pleasure in it. And the moment the percept becomes excessive in its effect on the perceiving organism, then there tends to be a shutdown on it. This excessive energy input gives rise to a refusal, and this refusal we call pain. But if the energy can come sufficiently easily so that the recipient organism can receive it at leisure, can take the energy in at a leisurely pace, then there arises in the organism pleasure. Pleasure is simply the point power that can be leisurely assimilated. So in Libra we must visualize a universal field of form, and this form is subdivided into further forms right down to most minute rotations, and each one of them has a potential pleasure value to a recipient organism. So in Libra we are evaluating an equilibrated field, balanced, of the totality of universal percepts, any one of which taken out of that context can become a particular percept and fulfill a particular purpose. So think about Libra as symbolizing the perceptual aspect biased towards pleasure. To be a Libran is to be pleasure biased and to be perceptive. And all the percepts are pursued because of their potential pleasure giving. Now, if we imagine we have an infinity of perceptual possibilities, then we have to say that if we leave it at the infinite level, we must not draw a line, a circumscribing line, because if we draw a circumscribing line, we are not talking about the infinite. The infinite is that field in which all circumscribing lines, all circles are drawn. Any given circle represents a zone that has been encapsulated, made into a kind of spherical bag, and inside this bag are trapped many, but not an infinite number, many perceptual possibilities. And Libra represents this universal. Remember, universal is encapsulated. Universal is not infinite. Universal, cosmic, means encapsulated. In this sphere, this spherical bag, all the percepts within the universe are considered, and they are viewed as potentially able to give pleasure. The order in which you take them is very important, in the same way that when you're having a meal, the order in which you eat things is important. You begin a meal by taking certain things to create certain sensitivities in you, to stimulate the palate and so on. You go through your seven-course meal, which of course you all have in the evening, in a certain ritualized manner, and you finish up with a certain substance that you did not begin with and that you didn't have in the middle. If you didn't take the elements of your food in a definite order, you would not enjoy that meal. And this means that if you know how to arrange the totality of percepts within the universe, you can enjoy the universe as the original meal that is referred to in the riddle of Samson. Out of the eater, that is the infinite, comes forth the meat, that is the universe. So that there is a hierarchy of pleasure pursuits, there is a hierarchy of formal significances. To take things in the right order is to be able to swallow the whole universe. To take them in the wrong order is to get intellectual indigestion. So that the subject matter to teach to a baby is not the same that that baby will want to know about when it reaches puberty, and not the same that that baby will want to know about when it gets married, divorced and buried. On each occasion it will need, those are synonyms, it's different. On each occasion it will partake of a certain part of the universal diet. If it gets them in the right order, it can assimilate them all. If it gets them in the wrong order, it will have indigestion. Now, in order to get order, we always say in order to, meaning there is a procedure which, if followed in a certain sequence, constitutes a means whereby the goal must be attained. An unattained goal means wrong procedure. It is therefore requisite that the percepts in the universe shall be encapsulated in a definite order. And this means that we have to have little bags to put the percepts in. And these little bags we call categories. If you study the development of a human being from the moment of conception to the moment of death, you will find that certain things happen in a definite order, and that statistically these will apply to all normally constituted human beings. There is an order of development for every human being. To skip a step is to be injured by the misstep. You cannot take a new baby, dress it in a sailor suit, stamp it with a rubber stamp on its posterior AB, and send it immediately to sea. If you do, it will become seasick. Therefore, you must graduate the order of percepts which you take in. And to do this, they must be put in little bags for you, and these little bags presuppose a storing place that you are going to keep them. So within the universal field of perceptual possibilities, it is implied that if you are going to avoid indigestion, you must take the universe in bits, and you must take these bits and put them in bags, in categories, and store them so that when you have had them, you can put them away. As St. Paul says, when you are a child, you do childish things, and when you're a grown man, then you will do grown-up things. This means you go through a certain experience. When you've suddenly assimilated that, you put it in its bag, and you throw it over your shoulder, and by a little manipulation with your stick, your red-spotted handkerchief on the other end will catch it. Those of you who know intimately the symbology of the tarot and recognize the fool in that description. At the end of his stick he carries this red spotted handkerchief bag, like a good quality tramp or Irish navvy, and in it he keeps all that he has transcended. And as far as he's concerned, it is stuff he has encapsulated and stored in his memory because he has finished with it. If you haven't finished with it, don't put it in the bag yet. This is a very important rule. If you put into your memory as formulated and tie it up, I know a girl that likes to tie things up. She says, oh, that's tied up now. When she says this, it means the subject matter is now closed. Being a woman, she means until the next time. She calls it tied up. If you tie a thing up in such a way, this is a male tendency, as to lead yourself to believe that what you have tied up you have understood and finished with, then you're in trouble. You have to tie things up and put them in the bag and say, for the time being, I believe I have sufficiently understood that thing. So that when you're a little baby, the mother is out, you suck your thumb. For the time being, you put away other things and concentrate on the thumb. When reality comes back, you take the thumb out and you put that in the bag. The important thing is that at every moment of your life, you have achieved something by perceiving. You remember your percept, you put it in a little bag, you store it, and you may or may not use it. If you have thoroughly understood it, for you it is rubbish. If you haven't thoroughly understood it, it is not yet best quality rubbish, and you shouldn't put it away in the bag and forget it. Supposing we say that there is inside the protoplasm a function we call memory. This memory is the bag. It means that when energy is put into the organism in a perceptual act, the energy inserted rotates. So all it means, we insert a stimulus, the energy going in turns round. And by the repetition of its turning, it constitutes a memory. Using M for substance equals protoplasm, and R for the differentiating factor, then memra means the differentiation of that substance, still vibrating in that substance, still recoverable. This memory, if closed permanently, is machinery. It's pure mechanics. So if you thought that you had finished with sucking of the thumbs because you were now two, and you swore an oath to yourself that you would never again suck thumbs, in relation to that you would be dead. Because thumbs are everywhere and disguised in various guises, and the whole concept will need continuous re-evaluation. So in the perceptual field, to avoid indigestion, we posit as our next point, the fixed point of ours, shouts of correction from all directions, because Aries means the absolute differentiation. What happens is that the energy of the percepts here rotates and establishes itself as a memory. When we come to the fire triad, we'll understand why it does this, and here we call this by insertion of a quo, as in quo vadis. We make Aquarius out of Aries. Is that correct? We posit in our memory those things which we believe we must continue to know something about. The activity of the stimulus energy that we are conserving. We do it for two purposes. One is, it may be pleasurable and worth recording for re-enjoyment, or it may be painful, worth recording for future avoidance. So in Aquarius here, we have the sign of Saturn, meaning let us contract, control, shut down, so that these percepts shall not escape. They are of two orders, painful ones for avoidance, pleasurable ones for re-experiencing. Now, in the Aquarian position, as this sign is said to mean the water carrier, some people get puzzled and think it's a water sign. It is not a water sign, it is an air sign, which means it is symbolizing something to do with the intellect, but there is a water element in it because it is your protoplasm, which is nearly 100% water. It is your protoplasm which is vibrating and retaining by this characteristic vibration the formal, that is the intellectual, content of the percept. So although you're using water, protoplasm, to maintain the experiences, you are not concerned with the fact that it is protoplasm, but the fact that it is formulated energy pattern, formulated. So when we say the water carrier, we are referring to the carrier as the consciousness that has created this protoplasm in order to record the pleasant and dialectically the painful for avoidance. Saturn is the sign of contraction, centripetal force, covering force, encapsulating force. It is Saturn that determines that there is a memory, that energy, once inserted, cannot get away. So if you look inside yourself at your perceptual experience, you will find that if the thing is very pleasurable, there arises a convergence of energy inside you on that pleasurable experience, and an attempt to photograph it. And to do this, the energy must be rotated. It must spin. The stimulus energy inserted must be spun round so that it can give itself a local habitation and a name, so that you can recall it if necessary or if desired at some future date. So from the balance field of perceptual possibilities, percepts cut out that which appears to fulfill a pleasure purpose. And it then records these, and in the process of undergoing these experiences, it discovers that certain experiences are not pleasant and finds it should record these as well because it wishes to avoid them. So the memory is full of painful and pleasurable stimulus rotatory energies. A memory is nothing but the energy of the original stimulus encapsulated and made to rotate. The amount of energy in the encapsulated zone can be increased by the act of interest. That is, by pouring more energy from the field of your own being. You are a power field. Pouring energy into that pleasure zone, and by so doing, stepping up the intensity of the pleasure. It is a feedback principle whereby you get pleasure from the stimulus. You spin the stimulus to establish it as a memory, and then by continuous re-entering into it with interest, you pile in more energy so that you actually increase the pleasurable content of the encapsulated zone by your own interest. Interest is there to show a profit. Every time you show a profit in this way, you always feel better than if you show a loss. So here we have the encapsulation principle, Saturn, and remember Sat means being, Urn means Urn. Saturn, Urn of being. But there is no Urn of being without a turn. So it is Sa, turn. Sa, spiritual activity, turn, rotate. Observe that Tur is an anagram of rotate, with an N for the continuity principle. Saturn means Urn of being, Urn of Sat, and it means turn of Sa. That is spiritual activating energy turns itself and encloses an area in the turning process, and this is a sa turn, a turn of spiritual energy, and it is an urn of sat, that is, of being. Once we have this memory established, we have a number of percepts, we can formally discuss the content of the memory and of the perceptual world. So there are two things now. We have the perceptual field, Libra, and we have selections from the perceptual field in Aquarius, held in by Saturn. So there are two things there that we can now manipulate. All these processes occur within the field of sentient power. And because there are two things here, therefore the third position will contain both of them. Every process in time is evolved into subsequent processes, and every present situation has within it hidden every step to its present condition. You can see why Nietzsche says the misstep will not forgive you. Your present condition, your present grasp of reality, is nothing but the totality of all the things you've ever done, recorded in your protoplasmic substance and available to you in memory analysis. The thing you do not do, you do not know about. And it's a very important thing. Unless your protoplasm is put through the mill, it will not be ground down and become a finely perceptive protoplasm. The thing you don't do is the thing you don't understand. To understand is to be. Unless you are being, you cannot comprehend. And you can only comprehend those things which you persuade yourself to become. And becoming has two meanings. It means be arriving, coming to this place, KM, lock up your substance, and it means also beauty. A becoming thing is a beautifying thing. So we say that is very becoming, and we mean actually increasing in power, intelligence, sensitivity, coordination, and incarnation capacity. A becoming thing is something that increases your capacity for life on all levels. And you cannot comprehend a thing unless you become it. You cannot become it unless you activate yourself in the situation. There is no such thing as passive wisdom. All wisdom is self-experience of an incarnate intelligence. What is not incarnate is not ratified. The whole meaning of the incarnation is you will retain nothing permanently unless you can drive yourself physically into the situation. When you drive yourself into the situation physically, you've taken your will, your logic, your desires, your life force into the physical body. If you don't put it in the physical body, it will not be permanently engrammed upon your consciousness. The thing you learn only theoretically from a book will not stay with you. The thing you grind into your protoplasm in a real life experience will stay with you without effort. So Saturn is a compressive sign, and it means your memory is no better than your actual physical commitment in any given field. Now we have the perceptual and the remembered. And the difference is that in the percept, the stimulus goes through the enclosing membrane, and a bit of total reality is cut off by going into that enclosed organism, and when the energy gets in, it rotates. And that it is rotating means it is memorable. If it didn't rotate, it wouldn't be a memory. Perceptual energy is coming in, represented as an arrow, crossing a border, going into a circle, that is perception. Rotating that energy is memory. So we have two characteristic motion patterns here: straight line motion, vectored, and rotatory motion. So when we come to do the third aspect of Gemini, ruled by Mercury, we see that we have a balancing symbol, the two sides, the twins, to remind us of Libra, and we have a symbol of rotation, that is Mercury, to remind us of what must necessarily happen within a closed system when you insert energy into it. The entrance of the energy into the closed system guarantees its rotation, and that guarantees memory. So in Gemini, Mercury ruled, we can observe two things: the perceptual field and the mnemic or memory field. If we become very aware of this, we can learn much more rapidly. Most people live somewhere along this line between the cardinal and the fixed point. That is to say, they are not quite clear about whether what they have as a content in the mind is perceptual or memory element. If you do not distinguish clearly between a percept and a memory, your percept will become overlaid with memory. So you will not see reality as it is. You will see reality colored by the past. Every time you see reality colored by the past, you will be duped. It is essential, and this is a true function of Gemini, which is actually introduced into the universe by Dummel. And say the spirit of Donald, or in the Scotch, is Auld Don, which means original judgment, or God has divided it. This is the Donald we're talking about. There is a principle of judgment, and it belongs absolutely to the absolute, and the absolute is called Al. When Al divides, it is Old, and judgment is Don. So Old Don is the divine judge, and the only judge who can judge gestalt-wise perfectly. In Gemini, the consciousness looks at the percept and recognizes that it is a percept, not a memory. And he looks at the memory and recognizes that it is a memory and not a percept. And then he decides the relevance of the memory, that is a prior percept, to the extent, that is present percept. Here is an extent world, there is a mnemic world, a memory world. He looks at the extent physical perceptual fact, he looks at his recorded memories. He sees if any of the memories are relevant to this perceptual fact, and if they are, he does what is called recognizing the percept. If there is no relevance, he calls it a new percept and says, I do not yet understand it. That is, a new percept with no formal correspondence that can be seen to old ones recorded in the protoplasm cannot be recognized. To recognize is to see at least twice, better three times. The first time you see it, if it's new, you know nothing about it. The second time, you have a shadow that you may have seen this before. The third time, you can check up the first two times and form a triangle, which is the most economic closed figure of straight lines. You can't close an area with two lines. You can close the area with three straight lines. You could close an area with two curved lines, like that. And that gives rise to the Vesika Piscis. And therefore that is called a mediating concept between the straight, that is intellectual masculine, and the curve, that is emotive feminine. Now here we are with the air triad. we start with an equilibrated field of percepts. And they have been cut out from infinite possibility and by circumscription have been made finite. And in so far as the circumscription is clear, that is the line circumscribing it is not woolly edged, clean steel wire around the whole thing, you have a clear percept. You then drive that energy round and it goes into Aquarius, Saturn, into the memory. And then you have these two possibilities. The sentient field now looks at two differentiated motion characteristics. A vectored energy, the stimulus crossing the border into the closed system of the organism, and a rotatory energy constituting the memory. Gemini, therefore, is mutable. That is, it can change. It can look at a percept that is present, extant in the physical world, and it can look at a memory of such percepts of the past. Now, the universe, like all things created, is made of debris of prior universes, and therefore there is no such thing as perceptual material that is not emotively biased in some degree. That is, you have no opportunity as a baby to get a percept which is purely intellectual and having no emotive bias. So if any person thinks, like a geometer, a mathematician, a logician, if he thinks that he can think without an emotive bias, well then he is non-existential. No person can think without an emotive bias, because all his percepts upon which his thinking is based have been emotively charged prior to this universe being created, because of an infinity of creations before this one. So we must always suspect any percept that we have and understand that it has an emotive bias. We must never think anywhere that we are not emotively biased. If we know we are, we can contradict the emotional bias with an equal and opposite one. But if we fool ourselves and think that we are not biased, that we have no bias, then we are in trouble. To confess the bias and to balance it with an opposite bias is freedom. To deny the bias is to be enslaved by the hidden emotive charge on that percept or percept group. Well, we've dealt with the intellectual triad in outline, so we can now pass to the consideration of another one. We started with the intellectual triad because it is that one that formulates in words, and when we're giving a talk we usually use words. There are, of course, sound words and gesture words and so on. We must have some order of formal stimulus to convey formal knowledge. That formal knowledge, because of its clarity, is the biggest tyrant in the world. Tyrant, because tyrant is the word term plus cross, crucifixion. Because the forms of the intellect turn, rotate, they keep you in the cycle of definition. They encapsulate you, trap your imagination, and if you're not careful, they will trap your emotional energy and destroy your life and reduce it to mechanics. All formal definitions that are clear are formally related to other clear definitions, and all clearly formulated relationships are mechanical. There is no difference whatever between the relation of two cogwheels in a motor car engine and two ideas clearly defined in a human mind. To be clear intellectually and then to be determined by that clarity is to be a machine. Now, because machines are very efficient, motorboats, hovercraft, motor cars, aeroplanes and so on, because they prove themselves efficient, they tend to capture the imagination into the intellectual trap. So the person who knows most formally tends to be, as we call it, conceited. Now, conceited simply means conceptualized. A conceit is a concept. It's just an earlier form of the same word. A conceited person is a man well furnished with concepts. And when he is identified with his concepts, we take the P out of concept and use conceit. And that P means power. So that the man who is conceited is well formulated to the point where identification has taken over and he is now a mechanism determined by the forms with which he has identified. So we remove the P, which means the puppeting power, and leave him with the crucifixion and the closure. And this is conceit. The intellectual triad, historically, and the people who have been identified with it, have always defined themselves as the cleverest people on earth. The intellectually clear man is always in danger of forgetting three quarters of his being. Therefore, we must remember, in dealing with any intellectual proposition, that the clearer we are about it, the more mechanical we are about it, and the more mechanical we are, the less free we are. So if we are entirely devoted to the intellectual triad, and we have clear percepts, clearly defined memories, properly categorized, and we clearly, in Gemini, compare our clear percepts and our clear memories, we will lead an entirely unproblematic life, and we will be able to say, like the most fatuous man in the world of the intellectual triad, one fellow called Herbert Spencer, who, when a woman said to him, "Why is your forehead so smooth?" he replied, "Because, madam, I am never puzzled." And that was a serious statement by a philosopher. "Because I am never puzzled." Now, no doubt he would be astonished if he saw what critics have done with his theories that didn't puzzle him. He didn't see just how mechanical he was, that the whole structure was tautological, and that he had been hypnotized by the clarity of form. The clarity to know what to do and to know how to do it. How very nice. To know how, like Malcolm Muggeridge, to shake hands with Jesus and present him to a 5 million audience at one go. To know how to do it. And to be, by means of this super clarity, absolutely acceptable to everybody. Let's go to another sign. We will take the opposite triad, the fire triad, and we'll put the sign of the ram here. This is cardinal, as Libra was cardinal air. It is cardinal fire. And in this cardinal fire, we have the statement that whereas previously we were looking at the formal aspects of reality, we are now looking at the energy aspects. Energies that have no regard whatever for limitations designed by the intellect. So in the sign of the ram, we have a field of energies. In the absolute sense, they are balanced in the same way that Libra is balanced perceptually. But balance here means something quite different from what it does in Libra. Here, balance is bal. It is energy driving absolutely. What becomes bull in Taurus, the bull, the individuated drive, in Aries, in the ram, becomes, or is prior to becoming, absolute, multivectored energies. There is no direction that is not contained in the ram. So that the sign of the ram signifies energy and its absolute infinity of directions, utterly uncircumscribed and utterly unconcerned with form. Which means that if the cleverest intellectual in the world met the stupidest ram in the world, the ram would know he was right and the intellectual was wrong. There is a peculiar thing about the Aries position, That is, that it does not need to know anything whatever about anything in order to justify its superiority. It is superior. And in a very real sense it is superior, because it is the energy of the Ram that has produced the modalities which, when they rotate and circumscribe, become intellectual propositions. So that every Ram has a secret when talking to an intellectual, and that is that he says, I could have said that if I had so willed. But as you happen to have said it first, I shall disregard it. A Ram knows he can say anything about anything, because it is all energy. And he knows that providing he does not encapsulate himself, he cannot be refuted. If he doesn't commit himself to the logic of the air triad, then he can never be proved wrong. He is transcendent. He considers that a mere intellectual is a sort of mechanical precipitate of carelessness on the part of the Ram at some point of existence. All intellectual propositions are ramsical carelessness seized upon by those beings who lack sufficient energy to throw them away. Is that right, Bill? We've had confirmation from the Ram. Now, the peculiar thing about this Ram energy is that the tribe of Gad is the tribe, gadding about. And in its gadding about, because it knows it's absolutely superior, it has no idea whatever that within the universe there are three other modes of existence. It is rushing about. It has no idea that it can actually be trapped. So it is rather like something that rushes about unaware in the pleasure gardens, because remember, it can't read, it doesn't have formulation. It sees a gap, and there's a little wooden box by it, and a man with an official hat on, with his hand out. He doesn't know what this means. Obviously, this fellow in the box is either a Ram fooling about, or he's some misguided intellectual. So he rushes past this man into the opening, and he rushes along in all directions simultaneously, and then he can't find the way out. He's got into a maze without paying. This is the important thing. Now, this is caused by a very funny thing, which is very simple. Ram energy has a higher potential than any other energy in the universe. Consequently, it can actually gate crash anywhere. So that when an intellectual sets up one of his circumscriptions, the Ram energy usually doesn't notice the wall. He just walks through it. But when you enter a closed energy system, you necessarily slow down a little bit in overcoming the resistance of the wall. So imagine a Ram energy comes crashing in. He doesn't actually see the wall because he didn't design it. The essence of a Ram is that he never sees anything unless he designed it. And he comes in here, or he comes in here, or he comes in here, it doesn't matter where, it's non-existent. He crashes into this circle, and he slows down. Now, he doesn't know why he slowed down, because the thing doesn't exist. He now believes that he has slowed down because he has will to slow down. Now, he's so sure that he's right, but the next thing is he believes there must be something interesting in here because I have slowed down. So he... Oh, yes. All the Rams in this corner have said they will stand up in a minute. They crash along this line, slowing down, and before they know it, they have become Leos. They've got themselves encapsulated. But of course, as they're absolute anyway, and they identify always with what they're doing as right, it is perfectly obvious that encapsulation is the thing he's willing to do now. So that every true Ram, as he travels along here, he's quite sure that he's willing to become a lion for the time being. So he descends to Leo. Now, whereas he was Mars ruled there, but we should cover the paper with Mars symbols in all directions, in Leo he becomes the sun, symbol dot in the circle. He now comprehends, with exactly the same lack of conceit that rams are never conceited. That's an intellectual game. Rams have no concept whatever of conceit. It's beneath their notice. If somebody says to Ram, "You are conceited," he has no meaning for this term. The natural superiority of fire over mere air, considering that air can't move unless fire heats it, means that he must be whatever he is on purpose. So he becomes a sun. And during his sun period, he's quite... There's a ram in hysterics over there. Am I telling the truth, Peg? So, first time I've ever known be corroborated by his wife. Here we are. He has now become a Leo. He has exactly the same, not conceit, no, only arrogance, but not as a conceit, simply the right to appropriate whatever there is and to irradiate with his blessings all beings, whether they like it or not. He will shine equally on the righteous and on the unrighteous, and on the frozen and on the sweating. He doesn't care. They are going to have this radiation or else. So the Leo here finds himself in a peculiar situation, because he's not the very, very first ram who ever became a Leo. There are others within this encapsulation zone also radiating, which is quite astonishing to him at first. There are other suns about. Obviously other rams about, pretending to be suns. Not genuine suns, like this one. The others are pretend suns. It might even be worse, maybe only air signs that have heard about it and written a book about it. So, he says, "I must find out the source of this trouble. It's always trouble if somebody else shines." So he begins to move along this line, and he goes into Sagittarius, which is Jupiter ruled, and Jupiter of course means Dio Pater, God the Father. Now, as the Leo remembers perfectly well at a certain level of being that he is a ram, which means God the Father, he must go back to his God the Fatherness. But he has at the back of his mind, a mind here does not mean intellectual mind, at the back of his evaluation, which is in pure dynamics, he has a faint sense that he's been there before. Now, his non-conceit is so great that he could not dream of retracing his steps. Obviously, he's a transcendent being. He goes beyond all prior activities, beyond all new horizons, beyond all mountain ranges. And therefore, he will go back to God the Father forwards. He never goes back, only forwards. He'll make a triangular detour, so that when he finally comes back to the ram, nobody will notice that it's really the same ram that left. They'll be quite convinced that it is a new pioneering type being who has discovered an illimitable field of energy. Possibly they think it's ram energy, but he knows it isn't, because he is all that. When he returns to the infinite field, he sees it as non-personal, a field of activity for him. He's willed himself to be a Leo. He's willed himself to be a super marksman, shooting back at God the Father. And therefore, when he returns to the infinite field of energy from which he started, and which he knows he is, he returns to it as to himself, not himself. This is obviously his because he is the only lord of it. And yet, somehow, it is not the same thing that he left. Because if it were, he would have gone back, and that he never does. Therefore, in Sagittarius, we find a being who is pursuing power source. He doesn't want to be outshone by another sun, because he knows they're all charlatans of the sun. And he is determined to find that source energy. He knows underneath that this energy is infinite. And he knows that when he returns to it, he'll be back in that which he left. But he's not going to admit that he ever left it. It's going to be new territory that he discovers for the first time. You tend to think about the Rama, it's everything he does is for the first time. If he married 5 times, it would all be for the first time. Which is a habit of Ramas, by the way. And when he completes his triad here, he then is able, this is again a mutable sign, to consider the rotatory energies of the Leo Sun position and the non-rotatory absolute energies of the Ram, vectored infinitely martially, so that he has a choice of an absoluteness, non-individual, which enables him to override the authority of all sunbeams. This is a very important part. He can, at one moment, override all other suns by remembering his absoluteness, his non-finity, or, in the absence of other suns, he can claim, in the presence of air signs, water signs, and earth signs, not to be an embodied being at all, but merely the infinite speaking through this chosen vessel. So he can assume either at will of these positions. He can be a sun, or he can be infinitely powerful, and this at will. And this, of course, is the Sagittarian ambition. Here, then, we have a triad in exact opposition to the air triad, where the triad of the air means all formulations, all clarities, and in its extreme form, pure mechanicality caused by the clarity of definitions interlocking. And in the fire triad, we have energy absolutely refusing to be bound by any form of definitions whatever, and knowing itself to be more original than the air triad. Now we come to another triad. As these two are opposed, as free energy is to form, we need another triad to explain another aspect of the human being. Some human beings are not clear-headed and don't want to be, and they are also not energetic and don't want to be. They have a bias towards pleasure, towards sentience, towards the avoidance of pain. And these we symbolize in the water triad, and we draw the water triad like this. And here we put the sign of Cancer, right, 69 on its side, and the moon. Now, your feeling life is not an intellective life. It has none of the clarity of the intellectual life, and it has none of the violent energies of the fire triad, the energy life that appears in your nervous system. The water triad symbolizes your sentience, your capacity to feel. It is a very delicate, very sensitive thing. It deliberately repudiates energy because that would destroy its sensitivity, and it repudiates form because that would restrain its sensitivity. It would encapsulate it. What the water triad wants is an absolute feeling awareness of the continuum which transcends the intellect and is forever unattainable by the fire triad. See how canny the water triad is. You see why John the Baptist and John the Divine both belong on this water triad. When you feel, you go beyond the definitions of the intellect. And you also have sensitive awareness of vibrations in the continuum that tell you what is happening where fire triad beings are busy kicking up a fuss. So that in the sensitive life, in the feeling life, you transcend the limitations of form, that is, you escape mechanicality, and you become aware of the activities of fire signs far, far away. So that in terms of pleasure pursuit and pain avoidance, the water triad has it. It can feel millions of miles away a potential danger from fire signs. And it can go beyond the defining edges of intellectual definition. You see this in the case of the South American earthquake, where a few days before the earthquake, all the animals began to run away. And then just before the earthquake, all the birds flew away. And then on the earthquake day, the men said, "Now we know why they left." The men were being intellectual in propounding a problem. Why are the animals excited? We've had no statistics from the Weather Bureau, and they've run away. It's obviously what they call panic. It's animal panic that's driven them away. So they stayed. Your feeling life, your sentience, as such, not limited by intellective activities, and not obscured by the surging effects of fiery driving energies, is actually omniscient. That is, if you feel and suppress all intellective activity and curb urge tendencies in you, you become omniscient. Because you can then feel all the rotations of the air functions, the intellectual functions, as little rotations within the sentient field. And you can feel the slightest surging effects of any fiery activity that may be anywhere within the universe. So this feeling, this sentient water triad, is really the most important of the triads in the zodiac from the point of view of the pursuit of omniscience, or the mystical at-one-ment with the absolute. It is through feeling, through the negation of the negation of the intellect, and through the non-surging effect of the fire triad, it is through this non-surging and non-encapsulating that the water triad becomes aware of the totality of all formulations and all energy surges. Thus the water triad becomes the vehicle of omniscience. And the identification, the at-one-ment of the individual with the infinite field. In the cardinal position of Cancer, Moon dominated. The Moon symbolizes two processes. One, phasic behavior. It has a little opening crescent, and it goes full, and then a closing crescent. To symbolize that this feeling life begins to close itself, that's a waning phase, and before it comes to the point that would formulate something, it withdraws again, and that's a waxing phase. As soon as it begins to feel a limitation would be imposed on it by further contraction, it ceases to contract and expand. And it expands until it begins to feel that further expansion would attenuate it so much that it would not feel itself. So in this cardinal position of Cancer, it is continuously, delicately, like a jellyfish in the sea, contracting and expanding, never contracting to the point of formulation, never expanding to the point of excessive attenuation. So it feels itself. And because it is an energy in the field, in this subtle, gentle motion, it becomes aware of every disturbance created by other than itself. That is, every rotatory energy in infinity vibrates within this sphere, and every surge of energy produced by a fire sign vibrates within this sphere, and thus disposition of cancer in its waxing and waning is the basis of the at-one-ment with the absolute. Nevertheless, when it is contracting, it becomes a little clearer. And if the thing upon which it is contracting offers pleasure, the tendency is to press in a little bit harder. If it expands at a certain point, it will tend to attenuate and become faint and lose its identity. It returns. Each time it contracts, it tends to formulate. If when it contracts, there is a pleasure there, it tends to contract a little more. In this increased contraction is the tendency to devotion to the object. If the pleasure flux upon which it closes becomes very profitable, it starts moving along this line and goes to the sign Scorpio, ruled by Mars. Now, whereas Mars in Aries is an infinite number of energies vectored in all directions, in Scorpio, the feeling life closes on an object. Scorpio means not the cardinal pre-individual feeling of Cancer, it means the object devoting feeling. Feeling converging on an object because the object has promised to pay in pleasure terms. So it closes on the object. Therefore, in Scorpio, there is tremendous object devotion. And when the object is in the material world, that is called a function of John the Baptist, because John the Baptist is the one who gives you the baptism with water, and water symbolizes the material world. And when the object is not in the material world, but in the absolute field, that is called John the Divine. He is going to divide all material considerations absolutely until they vanish. Then he knows that he must return to the omniscience that is gained by this water sentience possibility. So John the Baptist means vectoring your feeling into the material world, and John the Divine back into the source, absolute sentience. When it devotes itself to an object in the time process, it is always that the object does not obey fully the expectancies of the Scorpio biased person. The object cannot obey because every object is unique, and the devoting power of one Scorpio devoting to another object, that devoting power has devoted itself to the object without total examination of the object, because total examination of the object is impossible. And because the object is other than itself, that Scorpio biased being must at some time find that the object to which this devotion has been given is not profitable, that is not totally controllable by the devotee. Every devotee making a prayer to a god is trying to constrain that god to do something for the devotee. Now, Scorpio represents all devotees everywhere, and in this devotion there is pursuit of some kind of ultimate pleasure. When it devotes to a time material object, the object cannot give the profit that is anticipated by the devotee, and therefore the devotee becomes disappointed with the object. When a devotee becomes disappointed with an idol, it often takes the chopper and chops it to bits. And therefore we find in the Scorpio position, Marshall ruled, a tremendous tendency when the object fails to give it what it seeks, to destroy it, or sometimes even to destroy itself. Certainly to destroy, if the object is not profitable. If the devotional intent is unprofitable, there tends to be destruction either of the object or of the devotee, or the relation between the object and the devotee, and go and find another object. So in becoming defeated in the time matter situation, that wouldn't occur if the Scorpio devoted itself to the absolute, but because the Absolute fulfills all the devotee's expectations. And in the time matter situation, the Swarupa is then driven through failing of the object of devotion, is driven into an emotive expression, and that takes us to Pisces. Now, in this case, we have a simple statement that every object devoted to persistently will be overloaded with energy, and the overload of energy will leak out of the object and or out of the devotee. Every closed situation, that is an object, has a certain capacity for absorbing a certain amount of energy. But when that energy is packed into it, it must come out. When it comes out, it is emotion. So emotion is the evidence of an overload in an encapsulated area of sentience. Emotion, emotion, outmotion. There is no outmotion unless that encapsulation area has become tumescent to an unbearable degree. Energy is pushed in until the tension is so great it has to come out. Either it comes out of the devotee because the object makes no response, or if the devotee is so clever that the object can't get away, then it comes out of the object in a screaming fit or rattling of the teeth. Anything can happen at such moments. The energy will find its own way out. So there we are. The Piscean position can alternate between the transcendent feeling of the Cancer position or the devotional aspect of Scorpio. The energy that is encapsulated in the devotional object leaks back into the sentient field. Every time you have an emotional display as an encapsulated being, you lose your energy to the field. That is why in all magical practices you are told that when you receive an initiation, keep your mouth shut. The energy that leaks out of an encapsulated zone cannot work in that zone. So to speak about hidden mysteries, like I'm doing now, is very, very foolish, because it means that you are losing energy and not formulating yourself on the inside to understand more and more of the mysteries. Which means that after this talk, I will have to go and do penance and keep my mouth shut, at least until tomorrow. Here is the plain statement: encapsulated zone, energy of Scorpio devotion drives into it until it's so full it squirts out. When it squirts out, it goes back into the field, returns to Cancer. But it is not non-formulated there. The character of the emotional energy is tremendously important, because as it's squirted out of this encapsulation zone, it spins. And we're talking about the water triad, which symbolizes your sentient power field. And as it squirts out of the encapsulated zone, either the object of devotion or the devotee, as it squirts, it turns and it creates a ring force. A ring force of sentient power. And it is characterized by the devotional intent of the Scorpio. This is the secret of Hieros Gamos. This is the secret behind all creation in the world. Every new emergence, every new orientation in history has been produced by devotional activity here. And remember that Scorpio rules the genitalia. And in driving into the enclosed situation, the encapsulated zone, the formulation inserted in it by the devotee, by that devotee's definition of what he wants, when the energy leaks out, it is characterized by the devotional intent of the devotee, or of the object, or of both fused together. So here we have a creative possibility. We can, by tremendous devotion, like John the Divine or John the Baptist in the material situation, we can pack energy into a closed situation and we can squirt it out, knowing that when it comes out it will rotate, it will travel back into the field, it will then be established in the infinite field, characterized by the definitional power, that's air signery, and fiery energy, to uphold his Mars rule, of the fire triad. And that rotating energy system will perpetuate in all universes subsequently the devotee's intent, empowered as a ring force of sentient power. So the water triad is of tremendous importance. The intellectual triad that has made the clarity has mechanized itself and computerized society. The fire triad has militarized the world. So if we put computerization, that is air triad, and nuclear bombs, that is fire triad, that is what those two triads together would make of the world, a computerized nuclear society. But the fire triad has given birth to all types of hippies, layabouts, opt-outers, and so on, is getting out of the definitions of the air signs and out of the surge for militarist intents of the fire signs. And in so doing, is re-finding the infinite sentient field power. Now, we come to the Earth triad. To complete the process, we have the cardinal position of Capricorn, and this symbolizes the whole triad, your physical body. Now, just as the function of the air triad is clarity, the function of the fire triad is get things moving, the function of the water triad is be sensitive to all possibilities, the function of the earth triad is to provide a stable reference point for the other three processes. Now, for this, we have to take rotatory energies, which we call primary material particles, gather them together, make atoms, make molecules, make various substances, proteins, organic substances, organisms. To do this, we must be scapegoated. The moment we make a physical body by ingesting rotatory energies, we establish this body as an inert system of reference. And because it comes into existence, it can be located, kicked, scratched, tied up, beaten, crucified. The mere fact that you have a physical body at all means that you are exposed to all manner of attack at the physical level. But without this physical body, although you escape attack, you cannot consolidate your own findings about reality. Therefore, at the physical level, you absorb. Capricorn means absorb the material universe. This you do by eating it or by sunbathing. All the energy you get out of your food is solar radiation converted by the plant. You either go sunbathing, deep breathing in some childish atmosphere, or you eat. And when you do these things, your body gets packed with energy and becomes a gross, material, substantial being which can be located and therefore can be a scapegoat. It can be attacked. It can be held responsible for whatever happens. In this absorption process, many, many different kinds of food energies are taken in, many elements. Remember, the universe is made of the debris of prior universes. That means that when you take in food, I'll know a little more about that, then we will all be in three. You are eating the excremental byproducts, the aberrations of prior universes, the favorite ideas of ladies millions of years ago, and they only had one idea, and the aberrated ideas of men were diverted to think there were some other ideas worth thinking about. All these things, when you eat food, you take in. You know that all the food you eat is excrementally fed. You know that you can't grow anything without manure. And you know that what you eat is converted to manure. It's debris of prior universes. And you know there is no matter that is not emotively charged, and therefore you are being conditioned by emotive attitudes and ideas and energy surges and so on from beings that is an individual now you never heard of from prior universes. Now this means you have to be careful with your diet. You thought. And the simplest way to be careful of your diet is one little test. The sun is a step-down transformer of absolute energy. It takes absolute energy and by a series of tricks of compression with it, lowers its potential and makes it available for finite mortal beings on Earth. So that all the energy you get is sun energy, but either directly from the sun, which is only one stage removed from the absolute, the sun is a step-down transformer, or through plants, animals, and humans if you eat them. So that the question of diet means eat your food as near as you can to naked sunlight. Choose those things that are most radiated by the sun. You are then nearest to the absolute source. The absolute, which would wipe out creation absolutely if it were to expose creation to the absolute energy, has mercifully made step-down transformers called stars, of which our sun is one. The absolute field, spiritual, sentient energy presses onto centers and through them, and those centers are called stars or suns. Our sun is one. So that when you're sunbathing, you're actually getting energy only one step from the absolute. You know this if you lie down in the sun, that you are being beaten by something very peculiar, with a peculiar rhythm of its own. And there is a tendency, more obviously in the ladies, because they have this capacity as water beings, to accept salvation without having to erect a coxcomb to prove that they invented it. Therefore, ladies are more prone to sunbathing than men are. In so doing, they are nearer to spirit. The sun is a step-down transformer of absolute energy. So as far as diet is concerned, the nearer you get to direct solar radiation, the better. You eat less in the summer, if you sunbathe, than you do in the winter when it's dark. All you're eating is solar energy. The nearer you get to solarized energies, the better. So those foods that naturally are grown in high solar radiation areas are full of that energy. And foods that are synthetic and have never been grown in the sunlight are deficient. And foods that are many times removed, a plant is a step down from the sun, but by photosynthesis makes it available, at two stages, absolute, sun, plant world. The animal world gets it from the plant, and the predator animal gets it from the animal that gets it from the plant. So if you lived on predators, you'd be far removed from solar radiation energy. Anybody who dines regularly on tiger flesh will understand what it means. So much for diet. Now, because there are many, many energies coming into the body, and these energies cannot function efficiently unless they are categorized, just in the same way that percepts cannot function efficiently unless they are categorized in the memory, so the energies absorbed in Capricorn to make your physical body traveling along this line deposit themselves, and the taken inputs differentiate themselves within the body according to their atomic characteristics, and they set up in the body centers in which they secrete themselves, and that is your endocrine gland system. The energies absorbed are carried along and they are positive in the endocrine system in the body. The glandular system is differentiated because the absorbed chemical elements are different. They have certain cross-references within the atomic scale. There is an octave law and there is a law of harmonics in the atomic scale. And they group themselves according to the atomic harmonic scale law of vibration. And they create the endocrine system in the body. The sign of the bull is just a drawing of an endocrine gland. Something is going in, going round, and coming out. You take your food, you spin it in certain zones, characterized by the absorbed elements, differential factors, and then you squirt it back into the blood. Now this allows the body to be a very cunning system in which you have a multicentral society with each endocrine gland structure dealing with a specific spectrum of elements and squirting its product into the bloodstream, so that the whole being has a highly complex system of messages chemically represented in the gland system. So that glandular balance is tremendously important, because the way you eat determines what you absorb from the earth and from prior universes, and the way you secrete it in your glands determines the very peculiar balance in the blood, and the blood is the vehicle of the sentient life. Your feeling life is in the blood, and the blood is what it is, and it's very, very subtly vibrating because of this most peculiar balance of chemicals, many of which we call hormones. Because of that secretory process, having to be gentle, we say it is ruled by Venus. You could not persuade the endocrine glands to select from absorbed food by vibratory harmonic techniques that which they needed by a violent technique. They can only do it gently. This is hence the rule, never eat in anger. Anger is Mars, and that is Scorpio or Ram. If you eat in anger, you are mixing aggressive chemistry with the chemistry of love. If you eat feeling harmoniously disposed to the universe, that is a rule, always ahimsa, total harmlessness. Every time you eat a meal, say, I eat for the universe. May the universe receive the benefit of this food through this organism. And mean it. If you mean it, you will digest your food in a totally different way from if you're annoyed with some human being, some animal, some situation. If you are angry, you are toxic. The toxic effects of anger affect your glandular secretion, alter your blood balance, and destroy your sensitive appreciation of reality. And because these secretions are poured into the blood, it necessitates Virgo. Now Virgo rules the circulation, and the circulation, the blood system, the lymph system, and so on. All the fluids in your body, viewed as Virgoic, are not